One of the great people who has been outspoken for peace since I've been interested in these subjects is James Bovard. Follow James Bovard on Twitter, see his pieces everywhere. His books are phenomenal. Go to his website, and we'll put that up on the screen shortly. James Bovard is with us. James, how are you? And welcome to the David Knight Show.
Hey, Gardner, thanks for having me back on. It's always fun to talk to you. It's good to be on with a host I've known since 2005.
Yeah, that's true. Boy, we've had a lot of great conversations together. It's just been wonderful. And James, you have a piece that you wrote that I think is really worthwhile. It's about a very sad anniversary. And if people go to the Washington Post, they can see Ruby Ridge, The Story Was Waiting. And also on your own website, jamesbovard.com, people can see this. We're just around something that is a really, we want to talk about this. Why don't you bring up for people who are unfamiliar or people who might want to just, dive into this again, tell us a little bit about Randy Weaver and why we might be remembering Randy Weaver and Ruby Ridge right now.
Randy Weaver recently passed away. He was someone who became famous, not by his choice, after the federal government decided to go after him in the late 80s, early 90s. He was entrapped by an ATF agent into selling a firearm to him that the ATF agent may have then modified to make it look like it was an illegal sawed-off two-short rifle. And once the feds had that on him, the feds pressured him to become an informant against somebody. Randy Weaver was in Iowa, lived in Iowa, and moved to northern Idaho because he wanted to basically get away from people. But the feds didn't want to let him get away, so the feds came after him, and they were pressuring him to become an informant against some of the extremist organizations that were operating there in Idaho. But Randy Weaver would not become an informant, so the feds ramped up their case. The feds sent him the wrong day to show up in court. He didn't show up, so the feds turbocharged their pursuit of him. They even brought in the military surveillance planes to do mapping of his cabin at a place called Ruby Ridge. And then federal U.S. Marshals kept trespassing onto his land. And in August 1992, two teams of three marshals went onto his property. And there was one team that was throwing dogs at towards the Weaver cabin, throwing rocks towards the cabin. A dog came out and started chasing them. The marshals got frightened by the dog and ran off. And then they turned and shot and killed the dog, and then got in a firefight with Weaver's 14-year-old son, who was turning and leaving, going back home, when he was shot and killed in the back by a U.S. marshal. During that firefight, Kevin Harris, a family friend who was staying with the Weaver family, also shot and killed a U.S. marshal. So what happened then, the U.S. marshals told the FBI this fairy tale about how the clash happened. The FBI sent in their hostage rescue team, and on the following afternoon, FBI sniper Lon Horiuchi shot and killed Vicki Weaver as she stood in her cabin door holding her newborn baby.
Now, Lon Horiuchi pops up elsewhere amongst the dark history of the United States government and its strong arm tactics, its killing machine. Could you tell us a little bit about this guy, Lon Horiuchi?
Yeah, he was a West Point graduate. I think if memory serves, he was the lowest ranked person in his class. I think there's a term for that, goat or something like that. I forgot. It's definitely not the GOAT acronym for greatest of all time.
Right.
But he was also at Waco. The hostage, so-called hostage rescue team was there.
What's it like having supersonic Wi-Fi from Xfinity? It's fast, like riding a cheetah fast. Kitty, U-turn please. Unbeatable internet only from Xfinity.
Get supersonic Wi-Fi with a new Xfinity 341 bundle. Unlimited gig internet with a 2-year rate guarantee, a free streaming box, and add Xfinity Mobile. Go to Xfinity.com/341, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today. Restrictions apply. Xfinity Mobile requires postpay Xfinity Internet. After 24 months, regular rates apply to all services and devices.
I didn't realize you liked me that way deal. Because it's one thing to receive McDonald's, but an entirely other thing to know that they woke up early to face the world and bring you McDonald's breakfast still hot in the bag.
Appreciate you.
There's a deal for every morning. Now grab two loaded sausage burritos for only $3. Prices and participation may vary. Single item at regular price. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Janet Reno sent in the tanks and ended that clash with 80 dead civilians. He had a long record. My understanding, he's given a new identity. He's basically been invisible for the last 25 years. Striking was that after the first storyline the FBI had was that Vicki Weaver had been shot in the front yard and that she basically deserved what she got. That's something that played badly, so the FBI changed the story and then said, well, she was shot accidentally. And then the FBI destroyed a lot of evidence. One of the top FBI officials was sent to prison for destroying evidence in the Ruby Ridge case. The case, Randy Weaver and Kevin Harris were tried in federal court in Idaho, and Idaho jury found them not guilty on almost all charges. And that was a bombshell decision because at that point, the Clinton administration was trying to ramp up their crackdown on gun owners as well as folks who had too much distrust, I think they felt, of the federal government. And the Ruby Ridge case epitomized the FBI out of control and federal agents with a license to kill. And there was cover-up was, there was a 542-page report by the Justice Department looking at the case. There was a story I did for the Wall Street Journal in early 1995 that said there was no accountability. FBI Chief Lewis Free attacked me in that story. He and I went back and forth in the letters column. A few months later, I managed to get hold of that 542-page confidential report, and that basically proved that almost everything that Lewis Free had said to defend the FBI was false, and the FBI knew it. But, you know, the FBI is accustomed to getting away with a lot of stuff.
Well, you know, we're speaking with James Bovard, folks, and you can find James Bovard's books everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Go to jamesbovard.com. Follow James. James, what's your Twitter handle?
Jim Bovard, B-O-V-A-R-D. It's one of those damn French names.
Jim Bovard, B-O-V-A-R-D, everybody. Jim Bovard. And you'll see just an amazing stream of information, not only material that Jim is working on, but also material that he finds. And as I mentioned, you know, when I put things out, you try to unwrap that onion. And that's what Jim does. He'll see something and he'll say, oh, well, remember this from a few years ago? Or, well, here's what this person said. And you did a really good job with the Washington Post on this, Jim. If people were following you on Twitter yesterday, you have a piece in the Post, which is it's not officially a Post thing. It's something where you wrote to chastise them about Ruby Ridge. And I just want to read a little bit and compliment you, Jim. You said, in response to questions from callers about why the media did not focus on federal wrongdoing in the Ruby Ridge Randy Weaver incident from earlier, Ombudsman Geneva Overholzer declares, quote, a big part of the answer is the media couldn't. Law enforcement officials in this case, as in many, were virtually the only sources available. And you point out the date for that. You said this is ludicrous. Many publications had the story long before your paper. The real reason is why your paper chose to be spoon-fed by federal law enforcement on a story. The real reason is why your paper chose to be spoon-fed by federal law enforcement on a story that was of great concern to millions of Americans. The Weaver case involving the death of a U.S. Marshal, the killing of a 14-year-old Sammy Weaver by U.S. Marshal, and the killing of Vicki Weaver by an FBI sniper as Weaver stood on the doorstep of her Idaho cabin holding her 10-month-old baby has probably spurred as much distrust of Washington as the Waco debacle. And then you go through how the in October 1993, Edward Lodge, the chief federal judge in the state of Idaho, issued a 17-page statement detailing federal abuses during the case. The trial transcripts clearly showed that the U.S. Marshals had repeatedly changed their version of events, that FBI officials contradicted themselves, and that key evidence had been tampered with or destroyed. Several competent and credible defense attorneys were involved in the case. One of them, David Nevin, wrote an excellent op-ed piece for your paper on July 15, 1993, yet the observations of the defense attorneys seemed to vanish from your paper's collective memory. And it is truly amazing to look at what the FBI did to these people. And I would like to talk in the abstract, Jim, about the FBI itself. Judge Napolitano has done a great job on this. Whether it's Louis Free or it's other people involved with the FBI, we see so many instances of FBI wrongdoing, and yet it seems as if very few people are called to task, or the very concept of the FBI is not questioned. Could you talk a little bit about that, whether it's their seeming magic powers to somehow almost create out of thin air plots to kidnap the governor of Michigan, or it's the fact that hardly anyone is ever called to task on these things?
Well, a huge part of the problem is that papers like the Washington Post would far rather publish leaks by the FBI from their high-ranking officials than they would expose FBI wrongdoing. And this is a huge downfall with most of the Washington press corps. They're, you know, the FBI, going back to J. Edgar Hoover, was famous for spoon-feeding journalists and cultivating the sources. And basically that gave the FBI a heat shield from a lot of negative media coverage that it deserved. And, you know, it's a heck of an asterisk to the rule of law when you've got the most powerful federal domestic law enforcement agency that usually gets a free pass from the Washington media, from places like the Washington Post. There have been some Post reporters have done excellent work on the FBI, but their work has been vastly overshadowed by the amount of kowtowing that has been done to the FBI. We saw that during Russiagate, with how the Post and New York Times basically made a saint out of James Comey after Comey violated FBI rules, if not federal laws, and leaked memos he wrote to the to the New York Times, which helped spur the appointment of a special counsel and 2 years of nonsense during the Trump administration. The case you mentioned earlier, the FBI fabricating a plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan just before the 2020 election. I don't know how many votes that swayed, but I'm sure it swayed some. And it turned out that the case collapsed when it was presented to a jury in Michigan. There are a lot of questions about the FBI's role on the January 6th Capitol records. It's clear there were some FBI informants, if not operatives, in the crowd that day. There were endless warnings that there could be violence, but the Capitol Police had almost none of their police officers there that day. And the FBI, there's a lot of questions.
A lot of questions. And I think you need to be applauded, and I hope I do it enough, Jim, for your work, because I remember my pleasure, Jim. You know, I remember a while back you and I were chatting, and you mentioned how when your book, Feeling Your Pain, about Clinton and Al Gore was released, a lot of the at that time sort of ascendant conservative media people who had come around in the late 80s, early 90s, thanks to the ending of the very maliciously and inappropriately Orwellianly named so-called fairness doctrine. Talk radio rises. We see Fox News rise. It's great. A lot more conversation. It's fantastic. The fairness doctrine from the FCC was basically silencing radio because people wouldn't put opinion on AM radio because the thought that they would be forced to have to put on everybody's opinion. So opinion just was shuffled off into news. They called it news instead. We see this rise. And when you had your criticism and you had your amazingly dense book about the Clintons.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm going to quote that as a blurb. Amazingly dense.
It is a tome. There's so much research, you know. But, you know, you had that, and you said you were invited on television all the time, Fox News, conservative radio outlets everywhere. When you released The Bush Betrayal, and, of course, subsequent to that, Freedom in Chains, and so many books, Attention Deficit Democracy, Public Policy Hooligan, but particularly The Bush Betrayal, all of a sudden the conservatives didn't want to talk to you anymore. Is that right? Basically,
that's a fair summary. Yeah, I mean, I would actually say that started a year earlier when the Terrorism and Tyranny came out in late 2003. A lot of the places that had really liked feeling your pain bashing the Clinton administration didn't have any interest in a book bashing the Bush administration and the atrocities and fiascos that were already proliferating in the first 2 years of Bush's war on terror.
Interesting. Now, it's especially for a person who makes his living writing, and you know, you have made your name very well known. As you and I discussed, the book The Fair Trade Fraud saw you engaging in activities in order to get information that, you know, rival James Bond or something, you know, getting documents that spies would have wanted to get about how we are charged for all these different things in order to help certain special interests of the United States. They put on these tariffs to block French brassieres and French dairy and all this ridiculous stuff that harms consumers to the tune of about 8 times as much as they help the specific corporations they're trying to help. Total rent seeking. But it's very interesting, Jim, because, you know, you have successfully continued to endeavor to expose this wrongdoing, and you have been unflagging. You don't flinch. You don't kowtow. And I think if people go to Jim Bovard on Twitter, they'll see this. What's on your radar right now, Jim? I noticed that you, we go over to the Bovard blog. You had a piece released on the 9th, The Latest Media Assault on Freedom, the Ministry of Truth, and so on. Talk about that, or talk about anything you want. There might be something that could be popping up on your radar screen that we're not seeing right now.
Sure. Thanks very much for the opportunity. I've written a few times in the last couple of weeks about the growing crackdown on free speech. And what's striking is, if you think back to when you and I were coming of age politically, 70s, 80s, 90s, I mean, free speech was practically a given. There were a handful of folks who would carp about it, but it was, you know, it was an accepted American value. But we've seen in the last few years that it is no longer that way. And, you know, Biden announcing last week that he's appointing a disinformation czar was stunning, but it wasn't out of character, because you've already had people like Obama and Hillary Clinton claiming that we need some kind of huge crackdown on misinformation, which I guess misinformation means lies that are not government approved or government spawned. there was a fun line I had in this piece. What the hell was it? The definition of disinformation. It's simply, you know, that's often simply a question of the time between the gap in time between a government falsehood and when it is exposed.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you think back to the Iraq War, yeah, they got all these weapons of mass destruction. Well, actually, not really.
No.
You know, and hundreds of thousands of deaths of Iraqis and Americans later, it's like, well, never mind.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with our intervention in Libya,
yeah,
in Syria, probably Somalia, and God knows Ukraine. So
yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not simply conservative or liberal. It's across the board.
And, you know, Jim, I brought it up, and I'll bring it up on the screen for the viewers. David Knight Show. This is Gardner Goldsmith filling in for David Knight. And our guest is James Bovard. You can find James Bovard at jamesbovard.com. And, of course, follow him on his Twitter, Jim at Jim Bovard. B-O-V-A-R-D, Jim Bovard. And please check out these books. Seriously, when I picked up The Fair Trade Fraud, I was so happy. It's one of the best books I ever got. And sometime, Jim, we'll have to talk about that adventure story about where you got the documents with the massive list of tariffs that was the secret list that nobody was supposed to see. And you got it. It was just amazing. But now we're looking at things like, and I often rail against this, Jim. We're looking at, as I wrote for MRC TV, they've got a rabidly leftist FCC board nominee who's going to be going up in front of the full Senate coming up this next week into the summer. And it's very interesting, as I mentioned, we've got Nina Jankowicz and the Disinformation Governance Board, which is amazing. And people are calling the Ministry of Truth, but we already have ministries of truth. We've got the FCC, which has existed since they turned the Federal Radio Commission into the Federal Communications Commission back during the FDR era. And then we've got this new, we've got the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, we've got PBS, NPR. And then, and you're probably aware of this, they have reinstituted, starting last year under Biden, they reinstituted the Portman-Murphy Countering Foreign Propaganda Act, which shells out $150 million to favored media outlets if they spout the government line. It was put in during the last NDAA of National Defense Authorization Act of Obama in December of 2016. It was pushed throughout the summer of 2016. The whole Russian collusion narrative and the Russian hacking stuff, all that nonsense was all part of it. And Portman from Ohio, Senator, Republican, Murphy from Connecticut, Senator, Democrat, they combined to basically create a new state propaganda wing where they opened an office in the Pentagon. Now we're seeing the Federal Communications Commission bringing in their new nominee from Biden, Gigi Song, who has incredible ties to all sorts of Soros-backed NGOs, including some of them that were involved with the overthrow of Ukraine.
This is the 2014 coup?
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't looked at that 2016 thing closely on the foreign propaganda.
Yeah.
I should take a look at it, obviously. So, no, there was a provision, I think, in the Biden's Build Back Better Act, which would have opened the floodgates for federal subsidies for local media.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a real litmus test, because if people are so gullible about the nature of government and politicians that they would trust the government to do this and not have it just completely corrupt everything.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're beyond hope. It's like, okay, again, this is not a question for Republicans or Democrats. This is who politicians are. They want power. If you give them a lever, the funding, the subsidies, they will use the lever. All of a sudden, you're going to have a lot more puff pieces.
Yeah.
But hell, the media already publishes mostly puff pieces. So, but it could get worse.
Yeah, I agree with you. It could get worse. Oh, and I have to make sure that I get this straight. Gigi Song, the new FCC nominee, it's the woman who is going to be the co-chair of the Ministry of Truth, who's so closely allied with Soros and the NGOs, including the Poynter Institute and things like that. This woman, Gigi Song, has just openly called for more censorship and, of course, the return of the so-called fairness doctrine. She wants the fairness doctrine brought back. How wonderful that will be. And, you know, it blows my mind, Jim, because when you look at the system that the founders put together, and, you know, I am much more of a Christian anarchist. I agree with, obviously, the famous piece by Lysander Spooner, no trees in the Constitution of no authority. It's not a legal contract. There's no such thing as the social contract that is imposed on us. There's nothing that the polis does can be considered a voluntary contract because the polis by its nature is imposed. Otherwise, it would be a business and it wouldn't be a polis. So just by definition, anything the government does can't be done through the voluntary acceptance of its subjects. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a polis. It would be a business. It would be a voluntary interaction. But it's interesting because the FCC, you know, going back to the idea of, well, the radio waves go over state borders, so they can be regulated. Well, the radio waves, well, it's a limited spectrum. Ergo, they jump to the conclusion that the federal government can then own them and lease them out. And they've used these leases since the creation of the Federal Radio Commission in the 1920s, and then its transition to the FCC in the 1940s. They use them as very easy ways to gain friends and, of course, have great blocks in the media who will scratch their backs, whether it's the creation of the red and the blue networks, which then transitioned into CBS, NBC, ABC, that block that we had for so long until things were deregulated, or it's the idea that internet companies have to work with local politicians in order to get into towns, which the federal government stipulated in 1996. All these things set up these very incestuous political corporate connections. And I think you definitely see it. And you've experienced a lot of this censoriousness for a long time.
Yeah, and this is something, and it's sad that so many people have not learned any lessons from the abuses of federal power over the last century, as far as the FCC and predecessor agencies. But to see so many people saying that we need censorship now because otherwise, people might misgender somebody else, and so I mean that's one of the favorite examples. That's something that in the past that Twitter would do when they would ban someone who would say that a man could not get pregnant, and it's like, this is not hate speech. This is something I wrote about in the 1990s. It's something that Bill Clinton was pushing.
Yes.
This whole doctrine of hate speech.
Yes. Yes.
And it's a question of who is it who defines hate.
Yes.
I mean, heck, there's a lot of folks I know that have said things that sounded hateful. I mean, but it doesn't mean that I've got a right to muzzle them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people have hated me for what I've written. It's like, yeah, okay, that's a transaction cost. Deal with it.
Yeah, Jim, I'm so glad you brought it up. In fact, it was just a couple of weeks ago I asked the people at MRC TV to go find that quote after the Oklahoma City bombing, when Bill Clinton got up there, and I was actually going to write a book called Hate Radio about the history of talk radio and the malicious regulation. Yeah. So I went into the history of the FCC and the FRC, and I went exactly where you're going. I know exactly what you're talking about. It was when Bill Clinton said, "We hear so many angry voices. I'm sure you hear them now on talk radio." And he's essentially blaming Rush Limbaugh for the Oklahoma City bombing.
Hi, I'm Flo from Progressive. Being a baseball fanatic like me can be stressful. It's not all sports points and touchdowns. So Progressive is going to help you take your mind off your team for a moment. Instead of thinking about how they missed that goal point score, think about the Name Your Price tool from Progressive letting you choose coverage options based on your budget. Unlike your team that missed the end zone net area. Well, anyway, hope this distraction about Progressive's Name Your Price tool was helpful. It sure kept me from thinking about all those penalty balls. Yay, sports!
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Mom, you're too old to be driving. That won't work. I'm worried you might get hurt. No. Ugh, how do I say this?
At Country Meadows, we know it's hard to talk with your parents about touchy topics like driving or other at-risk behavior, but we can offer you guidance for getting started. Just visit the Resource Center at countrymeadows.com/resource for free access to advice on many topics for seniors and their families. We know it's not easy, but at Country Meadows, we're here to help.
And so, yeah, and it, you know, and he was up there with his sort of tan, desert tan looking sharp suit. And yeah, I still remember the color of it, you know, and you just sit there like, so this has been part of their, you know, one of the cards in their deck for a long time, this depiction of anybody who dissents as being evil or anything like that. And, you know, to me, it all goes back to cultural Marxism. It goes back to Gramsci. It goes back to many forms of postmodernism and semiotics, where they're claiming that they can interpret what you mean. It's a form of gaslighting. If they can control the idea of we will be the arbiters of what you say, we will tell you what you said, then they can portray anyone as the enemy of the people in a very fascistic Nazi-like way and claim that they must be isolated, they must be silenced for the protection of the people, whether it's people who are talking about that the jabs don't work, whether they're questioning the source of the so-called COVID-19 coronavirus, all of these things, people are, they're squelched, they're silenced. As I mentioned on Saturday night, I was filling in for David James, and I mentioned, you know, that Google blacklist that Zach Voorhees produced. I found out that MRC TV's material was on the Google blacklist, so that our material would be suppressed in searches. I remember doing an experiment with students, Jim, over the course of a school year. I knew that Google was starting to suppress things and move things around in the search engines, in the search results. So I had them focus on climate change, and in particular, certain terms like ClimateGate, University of East Anglia, hockey stick graph, things that if you were familiar with the terminology, you know that they're terms that expose some of the wrongdoing and statistical manipulation of some of the people who are behind the IPCC agenda and the Paris Accords and things like that to have a control over energy even more, due to their excuse of so-called the boogeyman of climate change, anthropogenic climate change. And the students could see over the course of about 5 or 6 months, they compared search engines to see the results on the search engines, how Google was starting to suppress this stuff. And I don't know how you've gotten around this. You must have to do this so much, but it's really to your credit that people are, in fact, I think they're more aware of your work now than just a few years ago. It's really awesome.
Oh, thanks. It's a challenge. I mean, there was a speech I gave, Hillsdale had a, in their annual Constitution Day.
Yeah.
And, I was one of the speakers I spoke on, spoke against Biden's vaccine mandate. And, you know, you do those Google searches and, you know, it was posted online by Hillsdale afterwards. It was not posted on YouTube. It might have gotten struck down by YouTube. I don't know because of my views on the vaccine mandate.
Mm.
But, you know, it was almost impossible to find doing a Google search. You know, I basically had to do, backtrack 6 different steps and then find the actual link. And, yeah, okay, so the link still worked. But as far as finding it with the search, is like, it was searching in a dark room for a black cat that wasn't there.
I know. You know, I ran into a situation where I was thinking about when I found out about Zach Voorhees, and God bless Zach Voorhees for doing what he did on the Google stuff. I ran into a situation where I thought about, you know, Jim, I don't know if you and I discussed this, but, you know, when I was a kid, my dad had this library of books ranging from, you know, Mises Human Action to Rothbard.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Great. Great
yeah,
it was, library. Great influence.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and it's that's one of the reasons why, you know, I work so hard. You know, I think about my folks and everything, and that's one of the things that really got me emotionally, Jim, was when I found out I was on the Google, or that MRC TV was on the Google blacklist. I thought about the work of my friends, you know, and they're good people, and you know, we don't agree on. You know, I'm a libertarian voluntarist. I'm a Christian anarchist. I want morally, I would prefer to have no government. I would go back to like the Viking Age Goddard system, or the Irish Brehon Law system, or, you know, even Hans Hermann Hoppe's arguments about monarchy, at least as Tolkien said, and I didn't even get to finish discussing this on Saturday. I was talking about how Tolkien said to one of his sons, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, that he would describe himself as either an anarchist or a monarchist. And he said he would prefer to have no polis whatsoever and the imposition of taxes and controls over people to allow them to have, you know, to have their moral choices. But he said, if there is to be a government, perhaps a monarchy is better than, clearly better than democracy, which is just mob rule. And as you say, it's two wolves and a sheep voting over lunch or dinner. He said, at least with a monarchy, you know your enemy. And with a monarch, you have the possibility that the monarch wants to retain something for his or her offspring. You don't have this fiction that the nation state is being run by the we of democracy, as in it's the people, when it's really just mob rule, you know? So I was thinking about my father and how he actually used to annotate those books, Jim. So he would go through human action.
That is a real blessing. That's something which has gone out of fashion, but you know, the old books I have, the books I got when I was a late teenager, getting into reading serious books, I mean, I marked the hell out of them for 40 years.
Yeah, exactly. I picked up the same thing. You write in them. And it's what is kind of fun too, Jim. I don't know if you do this, but sometimes I'll write something in the margins and I'll flip a page. And the thing that I wrote, where it's like a criticism of the author, where I say, wow, how come he's not discussing this? He'll get into it, or she'll get into it, you know? And it's like, oh, that's great. Yeah, I remember I had Mary Ruart's book, Healing Our World in an Age of Aggression, on a plane. And Ed Markey got on the plane. And I had been thinking about Ed Markey earlier in the day. It was when they were trying to push the FCC penalties up after the Janet Jackson imbroglio and the Super Bowl. And I had been watching from, I had been at a conference at Hillsdale watching Markey wanting to increase the so-called indecency fines, saying from my hotel, watching that on C-SPAN, saying, geez, if I could just give that guy a piece of my mind. It ended up that my flights got switched. I had to get on at Reagan Airport. And who walked on the flight that I was on like 7 hours later? Ed Markey. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my gosh, there he is. And I had Mary's book open, and I wrote on the margins, I said, story idea, why Congressman Markey wouldn't give me a ride home. And then So we flew into Boston, and we got out at Logan Airport, and he was in the back of the plane. I was more towards the front, and I waited, and I shuffled CDs around in my bag, and people are finally coming out, you know, last drips and drops of passengers. He's one of the last people out, all well coiffed, and his jacket is beautiful, you know, and he comes out and says, hey, Congressman. He said, oh, hello. And I was like, hey, no hard feelings. Cause I had brought up his FCC thing. And I had talked to him about how the arguments against, you know, it's a complete misconstruing of the Interstate Commerce Clause and so on and so forth. So it wasn't heated, but I just like, hey, I think your bill is bad and stuff. And so anyway, so I was like, hey.
I was hoping to hear, and all the listeners were hoping to hear about you giving the congressman a wedgie.
No, you'll have to talk to Howie Carr about that. Maybe he's uncovered something about that.
Howie Carr would do that. Yeah, he's a wild man.
Oh, he's a lot of fun, and he's got a young woman who used to work as one of his producers, who's now on at Noontime. Her name is Grace Curley, and she does a really good job. They formed this little network, so she's on from noon to three. But it was funny because when Markey came out, I say, hey, Congressman, no hard feelings about the disagreement on the bill. He goes, oh, that's okay. And he starts to turn away, and I caught him. It was almost like a performance. I say, oh, by the way, he said, yes. I was like, did you vote for federal funding for the big dig? And he sort of blinked.
That's great.
Yeah. He sort of blinked. He looked at me and he said, why, yes, I did. And, you know, it's $14 billion. It was in overruns of like 9 or